Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us is Daryl Contreras. Daryl is the Chief Compliance Officer for Millennium Health. And today we're going to be talking about codes of conduct, specifically simplifying them. First, Daryl, thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
Oh, thank you, Adam. It's a pleasure to be here.
And it's a pleasure having you. So let's start with a fundamental issue, which is the goal of the code of conduct. What should it be?
Sure. The goal, the code of conduct should be a decision-making document. I think when we first started doing codes of conduct back in the 90s for healthcare organizations, we were looking at like overall guidance. And we've kind of continued with that theme of a single page, or not single page, but single sentence guidance or short guidance for people so that they understand the governing principles of their expected behavior at the organization. Over time, I think that that has transitioned a little bit to really making sure that that document, that code of conduct or standard of conduct, is a guide for how decision-making is expected to be completed at the organization by all levels of people at the organization, from the executive level all the way down to the staff level employees. So that's where I think the goals are, is that overall decision-making guide.
So if with that goal, how would you define what makes it truly effective?
Effective is an interesting question because although there are certain statements that have been made about how to measure effectiveness and how to look for effectiveness, really at the end of all of this, what we're looking for is, do people use this document when they have a question, a compliance question, when they need guidance, when they're making decisions, when we're driving decisions and strategic decisions for the company, do we use this document? And so how do we look at that? And how do we measure that? How do we get people to recognize this code of conduct as that document? To be effective, it has to be something that people are welcomed to use and invited to use. And I think in the past, and I've done the same thing, we've used these lengthy codes of conduct and they've been multi-purpose and they've had all these different things in it. And it has a lot of great information in it. But what happens is employees look at it and they get intimidated by it or they get overwhelmed by it or they really don't get the key information out of it. So at the end, what they do is they open it up when they go to training. They close it up when they're done training. They stick it somewhere if it's a printed document. And they never see it again until next year's training. That to me, even though your document may be quote unquote effective because it checks all the boxes, it's not truly effective because you're not getting people to use it and rely on it. So the transition is we need something that people will look at and rely on and use on a regular basis when they have questions. To me, making it more inviting and accessible is the way to make it effective and to make it more usable by employees or to make that where employees actually use it. So I guess the simple way to say what makes it effective, are people using it to guide their decision making?
And you're an advocate to that end of making a one-page code of conduct. Now, why do you think that's a great format? I mean, you've already, I think, given some hints about that, but you know that it's much more accessible. What do you think makes it so much more powerful?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I really like this question because it's provocative. You said, wait, we went from a lengthy code of conduct. Now, I'll tell you, at Millennium Health, we had a 24-page code of conduct. And it had a lot of information. But I'm going to just be honest here. I'm the chief compliance officer. It's, quote, unquote, my document. And I dreaded every year when I had to do the review and go through and look through it and review it. Because it was so lengthy and tedious. And I thought, well, if that's me and I'm supposed to like this document, what is it like for the average employee who is just supposed to use it when they need help and when they have that, when they need that guidance? So what I thought was, well, let's go to the other end of the spectrum. Let's go to the extreme. You know, and if you did it for 2 pages or 3 pages, you could probably get to the same point. But really, when you make it one page, it's provocative and it really drives people to go, wow, in one page, how could you possibly do that? And so that was kind of the rationale for part of the rationale for getting there. But why do I think it works best? is because one page makes it accessible. When you put everything in front of people, it's easy to read, it's easy to follow, it's easy to kind of see what's included. I think where people get overwhelmed is when they see, oh, I have to open up, let's just take a policy. And even if you have a 5-page policy, they hear 5 pages. And I think people's brains immediately start thinking, am I going to be able to really find what I need? Because it's going to be buried in 5 pages. I don't have time to read 5 pages. But when you make something a single page, it becomes very easy to scan through and target in on where you need or the information you need. And so we put everything in there. Now, clearly, by admission, it is not going to cover every situation under the sun. But it is intended to give some governing principles and some guides to help look, to help let people know what is expected. And that's really what our goal was. So when the question is, why do you think that works best? Because I can hit the goal, I can make it easy, and I can make it something that people can see all at once without getting intimidated that it's buried in some lengthier document.
So for somebody who's got a 24-page code of conduct, the idea of getting it down to one page probably sounds pretty daunting. And so what should a 1-page code of conduct include then, you know, as guidance for them? And also, and probably more importantly, what should it not include?
Yeah, those are good questions. When we first started, we had a 24-page code of conduct, as I said. So we needed to look at, how do we include this? And Millennium Health, we're under a corporate integrity agreement as well. So we had additional requirements for our code of conduct that went over and above what everybody else would have to have. So how did we do it? How do we get this and figure out what needs to be there? So we did two things. We looked at all of the section headers that were in our existing code of conduct and started with that as a checklist. We also looked at all of the elements that were in the various compliance program guidance documents published by OIG. We, of course, looked at what was required under our corporate integrity agreement. And then we also looked at the effectiveness resource guide that was published through a joint effort with HCCA and OIG. And we put together the criteria. Now, those other criteria from the compliance program guidance don't give us substantive things, but they give us kind of the method to get these things in there. So for substance, we looked at our existing code of conduct. We also took a look at what are the big compliance issues that we have, or what are the concern areas that we have, or the things that we know we have to address. So you have structure that comes from like the compliance program guidance, meaning check those boxes, but then you have content that comes from your existing code, your issues that you're seeing, and anything else that you want to make sure is 100% clear. And I think the way I would do it is this. If somebody were to ask me, how I've got this lengthy document, what can I use to start with? Of course, what I just said, but then I would go to this. If you had to come back and come up with a list of a handful of things, what are the key things you want your employees to remember? And all employees, because remember, this document is for everybody. So what's that handful list of things that you want to make sure everybody knows when they get done with reading that standard of conduct? When you look at that, that helps you to drive it. Now, what you're going to end up with is a pretty decent laundry list. From that point, you have to narrow your laundry list down. And so that's where you use your resources, which is your compliance committee and your input from other people, whether it's legal counsel or maybe human resources, people who know what will resonate with your employees and how to message it. So you get your content and your topic outlines, like I definitely need to cover these things. But you've got to be careful to limit it. And this kind of goes into the what you shouldn't include. You shouldn't include so much that it becomes, well, we have 47 things that people are going to that we need people to remember. Because the reality is that people aren't going to remember them. We ended up identifying, what are the top 12 things that we want people to remember? The top 12 things that we're going to call our standards. So here's the question. Why did you pick 12? That seems like an awful lot. Yeah, it is. But here's the thing. I knew if I did 12, I can get people to remember that. And here's why. Everybody knows how many months there are in a year. So therefore, everybody can remember how many standards we have in our standards of conduct. We call it a standards of conduct. When we talk about it that way, I really don't expect people to have 1 through 12 memorized, but the more familiarity they have, the more they're going to start to pick up those 12 And we've done supplemental things with badge cards and things like that. So people can easily look down and reference what the 12 represent, what the 12 standards represent. So when you talk about what should it should include those key standards that you want to make sure people remember, and you may have to combine some things. And then what it shouldn't include is too much information, so that it becomes so lengthy that you just can't make it realistic for people to remember it. The other thing that we've seen in terms of what the policy should, or what the standard conduct or code of conduct should include, is it should include some level of reference to policy or being consistent with policy, but it shouldn't include anything that could be construed as a restatement of the policy. And here's the reason why. As I looked through our old standard, our old code of conduct, I looked and I saw things that were, the content was good. It had good things in there, good guidance in there. But what I noticed as I reviewed it is they were really restatements of our policy, of our various policies. And those various policies were way longer than this restatement. And I got to think about that. If I was looking at it and I saw this and recognized this as something that's part of our policy, what I may not recognize is that there may be other things in the policy that I need to actually know. So there could be a tendency to actually lean on this restatement as the summary or the entire part of the policy and disregard the other parts of the policy. But refer to the policy so people know where to get more information, but don't restate it because they're likely to substitute that as the policy. And I think that could be a risk.
So what's employee feedback been?
Overall, the employee feedback has been good. And what I've really enjoyed is seeing how the departments have rallied behind this. So one of the things we've been doing is every month we have a different promotion that we put on our intranet for one of the standards. And each department owns that promotion. And so what I've really enjoyed seeing is how the departments have been creative with their different standards and how they've done it. In fact, I was just reviewing one where they went with a superhero theme to promote their standard that's coming up for May. So it's been fun to watch that promotion and watch that. And I think that seeing in the single page, seeing it on their badge cards, the feedback has been very positive and really feeling like they're more connected to what the goals of the standard of conduct are.
We're at difficult times right now because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Being in the healthcare space, you guys are right in the middle of it. What do you see as the role of conduct during this era?
The code of conduct at this point, I think, is a stabilizing force and a stabilizing factor for people, because you know, a lot of things have changed and a lot of things are kind of up in the air, whether it's just economic performance or health performance or anything like that. And so I think when you can come back and say, these things haven't changed. And I think that when you go back to an accessible or reliable standard of conduct or code of conduct, you have the ability to go back and say, no matter what is out there, we as a company still stand for this. And again, to me, the shorter and more accessible that message is, the easier it is for people to relate to it and have that confidence of, my company is still standing strong, and my company is still standing in this direction with these standards in place.
Sorry, that's a good, strong, powerful statement. Well, Daryl, thank you so much for sharing this concept with us. I think it's a very intriguing one, and it takes me back to my advertising days, where a creative director I worked with said, "I wish my advertising was as effective as my clients thought it was." And the point being, and what we always say is, you can only communicate one idea. That's all you can expect people to remember from any piece of communication. And taking it into the code of conduct, I think, is a interesting place to be. So thank you for sharing this. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.